Howdy, folks. Not sure who's even listening to this, but I'm just going to keep doing it. This is Roberta Grant at the Human Nervous System Podcast. The date is, I never know what the date is. It's February, and it's definitely 2024. So, oh yeah, okay, it's February 13th. Yep, day before Valentine's Day. Yeah, so I'm back from my skiing out of motherhood into cronehood. Still in motherhood, but hopefully that gave me a leg up into cronehood and be wiser and not cry so much as my kid gets older. So that's what that was about. Still in it. Anyway, I hope y'all got something out of it. I definitely got some skiing. Hope I just farted. Hope y'all didn't hear that. I got some skiing in at Rosslyn, BC. It was amazing. Conditions got better there, so, you know, it was worth a trip, be by myself, have some time, been home, working my ass off, have had, like, let's see, 7 hours of clients yesterday, and I got 5 today, I'm also doing my first men's group today, and no, I'm not a man, but I'm trying this new thing where I, number one, I work by myself, and it's lonely, number two, loneliness is an epidemic. Number three, everybody's lonely. So why not get groups of people together who have similar themes of problems and help each other out? And at this point, it's more than the money for me. It's just to help with my compassion fatigue. So, yeah. So I'm going to talk about the Hungry Ghost Realm today. And kind of this is even more about grasping. The last two were the human realm and the animal realm. And the jealous god realm is about grasping too. But the hungry ghost realm is kind of like an equivalent of the jealous god realm, but on the other side. The hungry ghost, typically, I would think, crave voraciously. It's addiction. So there's a whole book about it. Gabor Mate, who is a childhood trauma therapist person, and he does lots of talks about these things, addiction and working with heroin junkies and just the world that people with a lifetime of trauma live in, and it's hard to get out of. And it's not my experience, because I would never claim to be a victim of something that's not true. I've been in the hungry ghost realm at times, but not to the extent that, let's say, a person on the street is, or a person with a really bad addiction, or someone with deep, complex PTSD that they have not healed or risen out of. Anyway, and I definitely have worked with clients with these issues. And it is amazing to see how the human soul, now this kind of realm really speaks to the resilience and capacity and courage and grit of what a human person can live through, and how much pain and suffering and still not be dead. I mean, I don't know why I'm fascinated by that kind of thing, but it's just people survive the craziest things, and I've always admired that in my job when I get the privilege of hearing someone's story and how they've overcome it. And I don't know, it's very humbling to hear those stories, and it's sad when they don't get out of it, but yeah, it's just like, wow. Okay, and I'll even talk about my own Hungry Ghost Realm experiences a little bit. So, traditional imagery: hungry ghosts are beings who, due to their accumulation of negative karma, are stuck in place where they crave voraciously but can never ever get satisfaction. Portrayed as starving wraiths with tiny mouths, thin necks, and very large bellies, all which symbolizes their insatiable hunger. It's a metaphor for the addictive personality. Ceaselessly plagued by hunger and thirst, but can never take in enough of what we crave to satisfy our desires. The mindset: all of our minds have visited the hungry ghost realm. We all have tasted this kind of insatiability in one area of our lives or another. Have you ever been lonely, stressed out, or anxious or reach for a drink or snack or some affirmation of worth, while at the same time feeling whatever you grab cannot possibly fill the hole? The answer is yes. That's the Hungry Ghost realm. So yes, we've all been there, but some people live in this. Okay, so I just said that last statement. Yes. Before the yes, I've been reading from the Awakening from the Daydream book by David Nickturn, Reimagining Buddha's Wheel of Life. So I have to say that before I'm reading. So it's an unconscious grasping of addiction. You know what? Maybe I should actually talk about the low-grade addiction in our culture is full of that, for sure. Grasping for material things, success, video games, porn, anything that's just tries to fill that hole of where we have no meaning and nothing helpful in our lives to help. And, you know, I take it back that the only people who experience this are the extreme people in the streets, but that's not true. I think even anyone in our culture at this point are going through sort of a meaning crisis, and addiction is one of the symptoms. Addiction to social media, addiction to anxiety, to the news, to fear, something outside of ourselves, right? So this is all my insights. I would say even mine, I have a flow state. I'm a bit of a flow state junkie, and when I don't get that, I probably do get addiction issues. A little more drinking, a little more drama in my life. I like my sports, and if I'm not doing them, I could see how it's a form of a epinephrine addiction. So, yeah, I'm going to pause this and go do something. Alrighty, I'm back. Had to drop the kids off at the pool. Probably lost about 5 pounds. Super nice. Hungry Ghost Realm. I would say this probably is very fitting of modern society in general. Most of us experience a low-grade rate of addiction. Addiction to our lifestyle. Dependence. How about that? Dependence. In the drug counselor and therapy world, there are different ratings of addiction. Addiction is physiological addiction, where your body can be physiologically addicted to something. That's extreme. That's when you go to detox. Most of us are probably on a dependence level, which is one level above that. Or some people are just completely sober, but from substances, but there might be things in their lives that they're addicted to. Sometimes we're addicted to behaviors. Sometimes we're addicted to habits. Anyway, it's a place where we all go to sometimes. And then there's those that live in it. So I'll just say the problem with it. I feel like there's lots on Google. You can look up addiction and everybody kind of knows about it. So I'm not going to go into the definition. But it's what's interesting about the Dharma Wheel, it was written during a time probably when life was more, in Asia, probably more of a feudal time. And I don't imagine people would live very long out in the such a rustic lifestyle, being too addicted to something physiologically, but some might have. Different times, so these things still exist for us. So anyway, so this book, back to the book, the problem with it. Constant anxiety over dissatisfaction leaves no room for proper appreciation for the development of perspective. It upsets our clarity and recurs relentlessly. Perhaps more than in any other realm, our psychology powerfully reinforces our habits of cravings. That's my dog drinking water. cravings with feelings of emptiness. Deep feelings of emptiness, a void that inspires panic and dread, drives our cravings. So we actually feel like our body's being dragged us deeper into the realm experience. Even if we don't get what we want, it doesn't have the power to satisfy us completely. So we keep going to the next object, thinking it will be the magic cure for emptiness and longing. The opportunity. We can cultivate insight that the object of our craving itself, are not substantial as they superficially seem. We suspect that there must be more to life than endless round desire, chase, acquire, and tire. Gonna go all the way. When we come face to face with this insatiable craving, we find the emptiness that drives it. This presents an opportunity to clearly see a truth about the nature of the cycle of existence. In this sense, finding ourselves plagued with the hungry ghost mindset and hitting rock bottom in that realm may be the beginning of our disillusionment, cynicism, with the whole Samaric charade, meaning crisis, right? That's my comment. This is perhaps why recovering addicts often move towards some form of spiritual practice so they can stabilize and deepen that recognition. The practice. Cultivating generosity. So, I'm going to save my next podcast for reading this. But cultivating generosity in a giving way. And I'm just going to talk about a little bit before I go into the practice part on the end of this segment that I do get addicted to podcasts because of my own loneliness and boredom at times from being, just being alone. And I think I have a lonely job and blah, blah, blah. That's why I'm trying to do, I say blah, 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 because I keep running against the same issues of the loneliness and fear of abandonment. As I've mentioned before, going, you know, my kids getting older, fear, afraid, being alone, losing my tribe, all this kind of thing that goes on in mothers, I think. And I've found myself trying to distract from those feelings. And it hasn't always been a good thing. So sometimes I'll listen to podcasts. And sometimes I find that I'm listening to podcasts mindlessly. I would say definitely that and drinking alcohol and has been off and on a thing. And more of a dependence of like a couple glasses in the evening. And I think it's okay to drink alcohol for me, but I could use a couple days a week of not. I've been trying to work on that. So distracting my mind, because I'm kind of a nerd and I can get addicted to like information, to not look at my feelings and my deeper emotions behind my pain and suffering of whatever I'm experiencing, because it's too painful. So this new podcast I've been listening to, it's called Kill Tony, and I've probably mentioned it before. I've been trying to listen to it more. It's a comedy podcast, and it's hilarious, and it really puts me in a better mindset. And I think what I love about it is it's extremely offensive, yes. And Tony Hinchcliffe has been canceled. Tony Hinchcliffe is the comedian on there. I've seen him live as well. However, there's something that he does on his show that feels fulfilling, that it doesn't feel like an addiction. It feels like it's gives me more meaning to see him give people, random everyday people on stage, 60 seconds of their comedic moment to be funny. Either they do well or they don't. And when the banter is really good, it feels like so refreshing to see other human beings interacting in such like a, they're all laughing and they're all enjoying themselves and complete improv. It's comedic improv, basically, like a Shark Tank for it. And so I've had a couple good laughs this morning, and it's made me happy today. So I feel ready to go to work. I don't know if that you would consider that a meditation, but I think that it also makes me want to go out in the world and cultivate generosity in a way and make other people laugh. And not so much the offensive comedy at other people's expense, but in a reasonable way, of course. But because I see so much sadness in my job, I think, and seriousness, that I want to cultivate generosity of play in other people and joy and fun in my own way. So I'm trying to come up with ways for myself to do that through the arts. Doing this podcast is one, kind of teaching and nerding out. I don't really know if anybody's getting anything from this, but I'm trying. But also, you know, I want to learn things like aerial silks and do some comedy with that. And I haven't tried that yet, but some performance-based art stuff and using my creativity to give to others. So this is the practice. I'll read it. In general, the approach to meditation in the six realms is to cultivate that which is in short supply. When you feel yourself in the hungry ghost realm, you're feeling poverty-stricken and without resources. You cannot extend generosity either towards yourself or others. So it's natural that the antidote will be to cultivate material as well as emotional generosity. Okay, traditionally we can cultivate several types of generosity. Material generosity, food, clothing, money, shelter, and so on. Donation to charity, working in a food kitchen. It's buying yourself some good food, taking a trip you want to take can be expression of this kind of attitude. So self-care, taking care of yourself. And you have to be careful when you're giving to not creating further craving and dissatisfaction. Here's number two, the gift of fearlessness. Lurking behind your impoverished mentality is fear. You're afraid you are inadequate, not good enough in some way. So you grasp at external comfort and superficial confirmation to generate a feeling of adequacy. If you can cultivate the bravery to uproot those deep-seated feelings of inadequacy and help others to do the same, you give the gift of fearlessness. Significantly, in many 12-step programs, mentoring others can become a strong part of one's own evolution and practice. Helping others to face their underlying fears and anxieties can help you strengthen your compassion and resolve to work with your own fears. Okay. I'm going to mention 12-step programs. I have learned more about these from my clients who have been a part of these things for years, and I am amazed at 12-step programs do have their issues, whether they're done in a group or individually. I have seen and learned from people that it's one way some folks have made community, stepped outside of their own pain and their own self-loathing, helped others, and felt like others have suffered with them. And this is the this is why group therapy and group support can be helpful. But even more, friends, family that are loving, like real friends, real relationships. Because I feel our society is so individualistic that often people don't even know that they might be suffering from the same exact thing as the last person that they're next to. Or in my job, it's common to hear theme after theme, similar collective themes of that people suffer from. And sometimes I just want to be like, hey, can we make a group so you guys can talk about it together? Because I feel that's more powerful than coming to individual therapy. Individual therapy is good for a certain point, but then there's a certain point when people need to reach out to others. So that was under the gift of fearlessness, and I got off on a tangent. But the next one is the gift of Dharma, seeing things as they clearly are. The truth is that we're fundamentally good and whole human beings. We may have layers and layers of doubt and security, but at the root, at the core, we're basically good. We can experience contentment and appreciation and respect for ourselves and others. We can cultivate stability and go beyond the constant need for confirmation and external approval. Because the habit of craving and cherishing is so strong, we may need to develop further insight into the nature of our suffering. Mindlessness and insight meditation practices can help us see patterns more clearly and create a space between craving and grasping, which is the most important link in the vicious cycle that generates the hungry ghost mentality. So that's the practice of cultivating generosity, which, material generosity, the gift of fearlessness, the gift of Dharma. Here's the last paragraph. It might be helpful to note here there's some aspects of our practice that are more formal, like mindfulness, insight, contemplative meditations. These are done in a quiet space, taking a good upright sitting posture. Others like being generous, compassionate, kind, mindful, and aware in the field, quote, are more informal. We practice them at any time in the course of our everyday lives. These types of practices are where formal practice pays off by infusing our minds and hearts as we engage our world. So this one sounds more communal, this kind of issue, instead of being bogged in our own hungry ghost realm alone ourselves. So I think and feel for myself that one of the things going towards comedy for me has helped to understand. First, I think I'm naturally drawn to funny things. Not everyone is, but that's seems to be something that helps me out. But the other thing about comedy is, and comedians, is a lot of the comedians, I'll just talk about Kiltony's show, are from, some of them have had some hard knocks lives, and you can see certain people who come on stage that they take, I don't know, some of the funniest people are the ones who've been through shit and made it through. And they're resilient enough to get on stage and make fun of themselves or make fun of others and also get made fun of. If you make fun of others, you have to be able to be made fun of too. And so it's amusing to see. He also asks people about their personal lives and what they've been through. And some of them are truckers. They're just, some of them are just, they don't have, these are people like everyday people with everyday jobs. I'm not talking about the famous celebrity comedians here. I'm talking about the ones that get on stage. yeah. So it's pretty cool that he asks them about their personal lives. And some of them have been through some pretty rough things. And some of the funniest people on stage are some of his, he has some disabled guests on there that obviously like will have cerebral palsy or some sort of disability, and they completely self-deprecate and laugh their asses off. And that's an extreme example of somebody who has overcome their situation and are able to at least bring some joy to themselves and others. Sometimes at their own expense, but sometimes they're making fun of people on stage, the other comedians. So anyway, I'm really going into this show. Sorry, tangent. To me, it's an exercise in watching humans working out their issues in a funny way. And every day I sit across from people working out their issues in a really serious way. So having those two different things has done something for me. I don't know what, but yeah. So that's my practice, is comedy. And and people who are brave enough to do that and cultivate the generosity of humor, they seem to be enjoying themselves and giving back. So, yeah. Anyway, and I think people laugh too, because some of the jokes, they cross over into universal themes of the human experience and what we all go through. So, yeah. The Hungry Ghost Realm you can get yourself out of it by, with different ways. Material generosity, volunteering, being of service, the gift of fearlessness, looking at your fear and stepping out of that and bonding with others, and the gift of Dharma, of seeing things as clearly as they are. So, yeah. Anyway. I feel so much better and more clear in my head now that I dropped the kids off at the pole. And y'all don't need to, that's an herb, look that up in the Urban Dictionary if you know what that means. So, yep. Okay, I'm going to work. Over and out. Bye.